created may thy God be the God of the hills and not a God of the valleys. Just that statement, think about it a little bit as you go through this class on Wednesday night. And then other than the two statements about obeying God versus his long suffering. And we'll talk about those. If you just give a little extra thought to those things there as you go through reading the chapters and stuff the next week on Wednesday night. So those two things for an assignment for Wednesday night a little bit. Think about God. The statement's made, God is the God of the hills, and we'll fight in the valley and win there. Whatever. Okay. All right, can I see where we are this morning as we get started? This is the kings as we've been through so far. On the left, the kings of Judah, the continuous run, all the lineage of David. First two being evil, Rehoboam and his son, Elijah, and then Asa and Jehoshaphat serving for a total of about 66 years, both good kings. So we're now in the middle of Jehoshaphat with his reign. Over in the north, we've had Jeroboam and his son, Nadab, both bad kings, dynasty ends, Baasha kills them, all the descendants of Jeroboam. So Baasha and Elah, his son, in reign, and then Zimri wipes them out because of their unfaithfulness. Zimri lasted a week, he burned the house down on himself, fearful of Omri. Omri comes in, and what was the thing said about him? Worse than anybody before. That's getting bad because they've already been referring back to the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. How bad Jeroboam was to start with. But now Omri comes in and he's worse than any of those before. And then his son Ahab comes in and what's said about him? He's worse than anybody before him. So he just gets down worse and worse and worse and goes here. So we're in the middle now of Ahab, a worse king, if you will, and versus Jehoshaphat in Judah, a good king. So keep those two contrasts in mind as we go through here today. As you think about that contrast between Ahab, wicked in the north, and Jehoshaphat, good in the south, excuse me, this doesn't come up today, but I'm thinking about this too. So you got Jehoshaphat running here, Ahab running here. He marries to Jezebel, which brings all the Baal worship in, causes all the trouble from idolatry there. Even though it's bad already, now it's worse. Okay, they have three children that come of significance here, Azariah, Jehoram, and then Athaliah. And then Jehoshaphat has a son, Jehoram. We get some name conflicts here, but the big thing is these two are going to get married. From the evil side to the good side. And we'll talk about all that and the consequences of that coming up. And then we got another Ahaziah over here, and then Athaliah jumps over there to the other side. And raised there a while. So I'm just kind of getting ready for some mixed up, complicated little things going on here as we get on this a little bit further. Okay, a little review from chapter 17 and 18 from last time. 17 starts off with Elijah making the statement that it's not going to rain again, as I say it is, to my word. What he's speaking, the inspiration of God as a prophet. So, it quits raining in heaven. It's this major drought all through Israel. Raining now at the north, Israel. God takes care of him, feeds him first at the brook, and then sends him up to the widow, and her oil doesn't run out, her flour doesn't run out. And so Elijah lives there, her son dies, Elijah raises him. A time of miracles going on now. God's trying to impress on the people that who he is, and he wants them to serve him and come back in their wickedness. And so the woman even says at the end of chapter 17 there, by this, I know that your words are true. You're speaking the words of the Lord because of what he did in raising her son from the dead. So, it impressed upon her with that. So the drought continues. And God sends Elijah to see Ahab, the king. Ahab sees him coming and says, here comes the troublemaker of Israel. And Elijah just turns right around and says, nope, I'm not the troublemaker. You are. You're the ones that cause the problems here because you're thanking God and you're serving the Baals. And so that was the real problem there. It's not the drought, not the lack of something to eat and the water. It was idolatry. That was the problem. And that was all Ahab, not Elijah. Then we have the contest that Elijah recommends or sets up for them on Mount Carmel between the 450 prophets of Baal and himself representing Jehovah. Equal altars, equal bullets to put on the altar, and you call on Baal to come down and burn it up with fire, and then I'll call on God to come down and burn it up with fire, and we'll see which one's God. So you know it goes on all day long, and doesn't happen. Elijah gets on to him for bouncing back and forth between two different things. Are you serving God or are you serving Baal? Make your mind up from that. So, obviously they tried all day long. Baal could not come down and burn the altar up, burn the sacrifice up. Pour more water on. Elijah said, no way it's going to burn naturally. And God sent down and consumes the altar of the wood, the sacrifice, the wood, and the altar, and scorches the ground all there. And the people at that point then say, Jehovah's God. Jehovah's God, we recognize that, we know that. But it doesn't last for just about that long. I mean, it's just so short-lived. And we'll get more into that as we go here. We talked about then the reference in James chapter 5 back to Elijah in prayer. Using the example of God, Elijah prayed earnestly. And there's one point I left out. I want to put in here. And if you were here last time, remember the conversation about that. And praying for one another. And who's doing the praying? Righteous man is. So if we are praying for one another, and it's the righteous person doing the praying, that means that we're the ones that should be righteous praying for one another. We talk about the type of prayer we're praying and that. Now, it uses, of course, a logical example. But look at the part that's underlined on the screen up there. What is that saying? Elijah was what? Man, what? The nature like ours. This example that he's using here of Elijah is not some elite, grand saint of some kind that has the ability to pray to God and get answered. But it's Elijah. He's a man. He's a man like us. So the example goes back to the fact that, yeah, it's the righteous that's doing the praying. Who are the righteous? We are. We're living like we ought to be. And the difference between us and Elijah, he was a prophet, we understand that. But when it comes to the praying, we're the righteous, and we pray, and God will hear our prayers. He'll answer our prayers as well. I did not make that point about Elijah, a man with nature like us last time. So we kind of come down to, and this, again, was not meant to be critical of anyone, but when's the last time you really prayed this effectual, fervent, earnest prayer we talked about last time? Because we do, it avails much. Okay. Full background, moving to chapter 19. 19, and we've got about half of 20 today. Alright, this big contest has gone on, and at the end of it, when the people recognized Jehovah as having brought down the fire and burned the altar up, what did they do to the 450 prophets of Baal? They killed them. 450. And who's kind of over this whole Baal worship thing? Jezebel is, okay? And she obviously was not there, so Ahab goes back. By the way, Mount Carmel's way, way up there in the top corner of the map, so you kind of know where it is. Things orient a little bit. Here is Samaria, the capital here. And of course, Jerusalem down here. Mount Carmel way up here. We'll talk about that in 1 minute. So Ahab goes and tells Jezebel what's happened. By the way, Elijah just had 450 of your prophets killed. Well, that puts her into a rage and says, by this time tomorrow, Elijah, you're going to be just like them. This is the queen speaking now, and she got her mad. Of what he's done, and just prove my God, my Baal idol here as being God, and kill all my prophets, and tomorrow you're going to be dead, Elijah. So that puts a little fear in Elijah. So he gets up and leaves. He runs. And so he goes from Mount Carmel, we were up there a while ago, come back down through this Jezreel Valley, and he goes to Beersheba. Beersheba is on the very, very, very south end of Judah. And as far down south as you go and still be in the land of Palestine, or land of Israel, was that? Land of Canaan.
He leaves and goes as far to get away from her as he can. He leaves his servant there, and he goes into the wilderness a little ways, and he gives up. He says, God, I tried, but it just didn't do any good. Just take my life and get me out of this thing. Just give me out. And where was he? Just a few days before? Literally on Mount Carmel, a high, sorry, on a high. He wasn't high on Mount Carmel physically, but he was on a high. He just got through defeating the prophets of Baal. But now he's down this very, very, very low thing. He just said to God, just take my life and get it over with. So Elijah goes to sleep. The angel wakes him up and has food and water for him and says, get up and eat. He does, goes back to sleep. Again, the angel wakes him up and says, get up and eat. Because this food has got to sustain you for a long journey. So he sends Elijah then down to Mount Horeb. Mount Horeb is another name for Mount Sinai. So he's come from way up here, Mount Carmel, over and down to Beersheba, the very end of the land. Now he goes by that far again, all the way down to Mount Sinai. Down here. So that's where God sends Elijah. Elijah's there, he's in a cave, and he's just hiding. So God comes to him and says, Elijah, what are you doing here? Why are you here, Elijah? And here's what he says. I worked hard. I tried. I proclaimed your word. I got out and talked. I tried to teach the people to come back from Baal and come back to you. And it's no good. I'm giving up. I'm the only one left serving you. And they're trying to seek my life and kill me now. Just take my life and get it out of the way. Then there's this tremendous wind. Now, I don't know what pictures you use to try to illustrate it. And there's two different thoughts on why the wind was coming there. And we're going to see next after the wind, there's a great earthquake and a great fire. The two different thoughts I read about it was, one of them is literally the presence of Jehovah coming in. Jehovah's coming in to speak to Elijah. And this is literally the power and might of Jehovah. As his presence comes in, it rips the mountains and the rocks apart, earthquakes, and the fire comes just literally because of the presence of God. The other thought is it comes in and he is showing Elijah his abundant power and might to come in and just destroy. He can come in and wipe things out with the wind. The earthquake with a fire, that's the power of God. But God's not in those things. God doesn't appear to Elijah out of the wind, or out of the fire, or out of the earthquake. No, when they think those things are over, there's this still voice that comes and speaks to Elijah. Elijah walks out of the cave, covers his face with his robe. Again, the voice comes in this time. What are you doing, Elijah? Worked hard. It's done no good. I've tried to serve you. Nobody listened to me. I'm the only one left. They're sticking my life. They're trying to kill me now. God said, get up. Get up and go. I've got things for you to do. You do three things specifically. Bottom us, start the bottom first. Bottom us, go and out, anoint Elisha to take your place. We can understand that. At some point, Elijah's going to be gone, and Elisha's going to come in and take his place. Well, back up to the middle, and then it says, going out, Jehu, anoint Jehu to be king over Israel. Well, we can understand that. That's where Ahab, that's where Elijah's from. So he will go back and anoint to be the next king of Israel after Ahab is gone. The top one seems a little strange. Why would a prophet of God from Israel going to be going up to Syria, who is a bitter enemy, and anoint a king up there. That seems a little bit strange there. He says three things to do. Elijah, get up off of this down you're on here. Get up and move. I got things for you to do. Go, go, go. Go on out, anoint Hazael to be king of Syria, and anoint Jehu to be king of Israel, and anoint Elisha to take your place. Get up, go. And furthermore, he says, you're not the only one left. I've got 7,000 who have not bowed that knee to Baal. Now, what's the number 7 represent generally in Bible terms? Complete. Okay? So, we don't know if 7,000, that little number 7,000, or if God's just saying, I got lots of them out there, Ahab. I mean, Elijah? Yeah, man. I've got lots of them out there, Elijah. You're not the only one left. 7 being this number of completeness or fullness. I've got lots of people serving me still. Don't feel like you're the only one. There's work to be done. Get up and go get it done. Think back, Elijah. Think about all the faith, the courage you had when you stood up. You called out the prophets of Baal. Come with me to a contest on Mount Carmel. We're going to put these altars there and these bullets there. And we're going to call on God to call down fire and burn them up. Faith, courage. Elijah, where'd it go? Where'd it go? Get up, Elijah. I got work for you to do. Remember what you were doing. I don't think they convinced the people. They didn't turn from the idol worship. They're still going to serve Baal. That don't matter. You get up and go. I got work for you to do. Okay? Remember that point. Now, God's a very patient one. He hasn't chastised him. He's just led him down to the point there where he can talk to him, show him his might and power, show him what he could do to the people. He could go into to Israel and just wipe them out. We have the earthquake of power. But he says, Elijah, you go back and talk to him. You go back up there and do the job. I'm going to speak through you. You're my prophet. So as he goes back, first we have recording of the three to be anointed. It's Elisha. Elisha's out plowing in the field with oxen. It says there's 12 yokes. He had the back one. There's some indication from that if he had enough land and oxen to have 12 yokes of oxen plowing in the field, there must have been some wealth in Elisha's family. And he's going to leave that to go follow Elijah. He said, let me go back and tell my folks goodbye. And then I'll come follow you. And he does. He goes back, takes those oxen, kills them, builds a fire, makes a sacrifice, have a feast, feeds the people, then he leaves and goes to be a servant to Elijah. So now we've got Elisha has been brought into the picture, and Elijah and Elisha are working together. Elisha as a student, if you will, of Elijah. Now the other two he's going to do is the capital of Israel is Samaria. That's where the Jehu will be serving. And way up here to the north. Remember Dan, where the island was, Dan to Beersheba, the length of the land. Way up past that is Damascus. It's Syria over there, the yellow part. So he's got to go up there and anoint Hazael to be king of Syria, which is, like I said, the bitter enemy of Israel. Battles and battles. But we'll get into one a little bit today, and then next time even more. Here are the Syrians. He's got to talk about them. They come in and attack Ahab in the north. Now, keep in mind, Jehoshaphat, the good king, is still rooted in Judah. We haven't talked about them much today. Maybe the north part. Ben-Hadad is king in Syria. Hazael will be the one that follows him. Like Jehu's going to follow Ahab, and Elisha's going to follow Elijah. All that's getting lined up by God. So Ben-Hadad's king of Syria up in Damascus, we looked at. He's got together this federation. He's got 32 kings. Now, this will not be kings of big countries. It'll be kings more of cities, more than likely. City kings. But 32 of them joined together with him to go fight against Ahab. So they go up to Samaria, and they kind of sit out there, surround it, if you will, and Ahab can see the forces out there, knows what he's up against. So then Hadad sends a messenger in to Ahab and says, I want your silver, I want your gold, I want your loveliest wives, and your nicest children. That's what I want. Send them out to me. They have to. What did they tell him? You have them. Okay. He looks out and sees the forces out there. He says, yeah, you want my silver, my gold, and my loveliest wives, my children? I agree. You have them. So, then the headache comes back. Next day he says, it's not enough. I want some more. Tomorrow my messengers, my people are going to come in and they're going to find anything in the city that pleases you, anything like you would want, anything that you want, and they're going to take it. Not just your silver, your gold, and your wives, and your lovely children. They're going to come and say anything that you've got that we think you want, that you'd like to have, that's valuable to you, we're going to take it. So that's Ahab says, wait a minute. That same army's still out there. They get counsel from some of the wiser elders, and they said, no, that's too much. So he sends back a reply to Ben-Hadad and says, okay, first thing I agreed with, but now you've gone too far. I'm not going to agree to this. Pretty brave. You got Ben-Hadad with 32 kings going with him out there sitting outside your city, making these threats. Ben-Hadad says, okay, I'll take your city of Damascus, and I'll make it just like I picked up a handful of dust and just threw it out. So I'm going to come in and essentially annihilate the city. About that time, well, Ahab's got where this statement come from, I don't know. Never heard no thing of don't count your chickens when they hatch or, you know, stuff like this. Well, that's kind of what Ahab says. But Ahab, don't count the victory that's over yet. Now, what gave him the courage to say that? I don't have the slightest idea at this point. But the prophet comes in to see Ahab, which I'm sure he's very surprised to see, and says, God's going to give you the victory. God's going to give you the victory. Not something he's used to, but he's going to do that so that you will know that there's a God in Israel. God is still trying to pull Ahab out of this downward spiral, this idolatry. He's going to come in and he's going to save them from the Syrians. Certainly not because of what Ahab's done. Okay. So they're going up against great odds. So Ahab basically says, okay, who's going to start this battle then? If we're going to go out and battle them and win it, who's going to start the battle? And the prophet says, you are. You are, Ahab. Okay. So he follows the prophet's instructions. He takes 232. If you read about this, some say young officers, some people go to the point of saying these were the, almost like the pages, the assistants to the officers, people that would not be normally trained for battle. That's who's going to go out first. They put 7,000 soldiers behind them. Now, what have we talked about in here already? About how much help God needs to win a battle. God saves by many or by few, right? We talked about Jonathan and his armor bearer. We talked about Gideon, but back and reference that a little bit. Why is God putting 232 people out there that don't know how to fight? He doesn't need them to fight, right? He's going to take care of it. I'm going to give you the victory, Ahab. So he goes out to do that. It ain't that all the kings are drunk. They're drinking. So the scouts say, here comes the people out. Okay, if they come in peace, do what? Take them alive. They come in peace, take them alive. They come out in battle, do what? Take them alive. Wait a minute. Did you get that a little wrong there? Now, if you're going to take somebody alive, how close are you going to get to them? If you're going to kill them, they come in war, kill them, what are you going to do? If you blow an arrow, you're going to shoot them, you never get close to them. But if you're going to take them alive, you'll get close to them. They do that, these young officers, they start killing every Syrian they come to. They get riled up, they get scared, and they flee, and they run. And God gives Israel the victory. He doesn't need a big army. So he gave Ahab this victory, and that's where we draw the line for today. We'll get more to the battle next time. Okay. Thank you, anybody. We're diving into some comments about this. Okay, I'll pick up 3 points to talk about a little bit, and they're not in chronological order. We're kind of bouncing around a little bit to dive into a point here. All 3 points in the lesson. This morning. The first one. Go back with me to Mount Horeb there when God's talking to Elijah, and he demonstrates his great power in the wind and the earthquake and in the fire. And basically, what's he trying to tell Elijah? Elijah, I can do this. I've got the power. All I need you to do is be willing to go do it, right? Quit sulking. You're not the only one working for me. God can work in lots of different ways. Many new ways. Ways beyond what we think about. He can work through me. But what does it take on my part? I can be willing to do it. That's the first point we're going to cross this morning. God has got work to be done. Not us. Elijah, God had work for you to do. But I can't run the other direction. I can't go to cave and hide. I've got to be willing to do it. Okay? What did Jesus say when his parents came back to the temple to find him? He was 12 years old. I got work to do. I got work to do. It's not my father's business. Colossians chapter 1, Paul is praying for Colossians. He says, I pray for you that you be filled with the knowledge of his will. And then verse 10 says, that you may walk, look at these points, that you walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, being fruitful in every good work. This is the work for the Colossians to do. And then increasing the knowledge of God. Paul is praying to the Colossians. Colossians, you got work to do. And in 2 Timothy, we're equipped. Matter of fact, we need to do the work, right? If we study the scriptures, what we talked about so many times over and over, we'll be equipped to do the work. So I got to be willing to go do it. First point. Second point. Let's go back and think about the faith and courage that Elijah had at Mount Carmel. When he put the altars up there, and did he know God would come down and burn that fire, or that altar up? Fire? He didn't know that, but he had faith in God that he would do it. And he had enough courage to stand up those 450 prophets of Baal and draw the contest out there. God's patient. God be patient with us. But there came a time when, what did God tell Elijah to do? You have to go. It's time to go to work now. Okay? So we're going to keep building our faith. We're going to keep growing. Our theme for the next year is increase by faith. I know the apostles asked Christ to increase our faith. We put the word my there so we get it personal. Increase my faith. So I keep building my faith. And God's got work for me to do. So what am I going to do? I got to get up and go get it done. Elijah could anoint those 3 people to be. To be the kings and to take his place. If he didn't get up, go do it. He could stay in that cave all day long and get it done. I got to get up and go. I'm willing. God's got to work. I get up and get it done. Okay? James chapter 1. He looks at the perfect law and everything. He teaches in it. It's not a forgetful hearer, but a what? I know this verse like the back of my hand. A doer of the work. This man will be blessed in what he does. What is this song we sing sometimes? It's time to build the church of our Lord. It's time to build. It's time to get it done. It's time to go to work. Elijah, get up and go. It's time to consider our ways. What are we doing sitting here in this cave? Do you remember what the first two phrases in the fourth of the song are? Base has the lead that says what? Now have faith. The other part comes in with what? Now have courage. Exactly the things we talked about already. It's time for us to build. It's time for us to look what we're doing. It's time for us to have faith and courage and get up, get it done. Exactly what God told Elijah. Then the other point, look at it right quick. We'll have some time left. The largest thing when he come up and said, I've tried. I've talked to the people. I've talked to them. I showed them about Carl. But they won't listen to me. They won't listen to me. I teach them your word and they won't listen. That's me. I worked so hard. I got those first 2 points down. But I worked so hard. I do personal work. It doesn't do any good. I just teach. I don't get any results out of it. Nobody. I don't see anybody working except me. I'm all one doing anything. Others aren't working as hard as I am. I'm just getting so discouraged. You know what? I've got 7,000. I've got a lot of people working. Get up and go. Get it done. What's my job? Keep doing my part. Whatever my part is, and get up and go and get it done. Scott's going to read for us 2 Corinthians 11. If you want to go there, about 6 verses. 2 Corinthians, not Prodigus, which of the New Testament. 2 Corinthians 11. We're going to read verses 23 through 28. What this is Paul talking about what he's been through. You think you look around and you think nothing getting done and you try and you get down out. Scott, read these verses for us, please. We got a problem? We got a problem in trying to get work done? Paul, what have you been through, Paul? Look at that list. What's Paul been through? You name it. It's about us in there. And he wasn't doing this calling it out sightseeing the countryside. What was he doing? The work of the Lord. Go through all these things. But look what he says. Philippians chapter 3. Look what Paul says. Brother, I don't count myself to have apprehended. One thing I do though, I forget those things behind. Which lives Scott and Israel. I forget those things. I pressing forward. I'm reaching forward. There's some things ahead. I got a goal out there. Will I have to go through it to get there? It's okay. I got work to do. I'm willing to do it. I'm going to keep on doing my part. Whatever it takes. Pride is sitting out there, Paul said. I'm going after it. Whatever it takes to get through there, get there. I'll do it. So, Elijah, are you willing to get up and go? Get up and go. I got that for you to do, Elijah. Going north this way, going north this way, going north this way. Besides that, you're not by yourself. There's other folks working. Get your faith up, Elijah. Get your courage up. Let's go back and go to work. How about us? Are we willing? Got our faith up. Got our courage up. Ready to get up and go. We'll get down and out sometime. That's all right. Get up and go again. Okay. Off my soapbox. Quit preaching. What else? Anybody got a comment? What did you talk about? Anybody awake? Hello? All right. I'm with it. Going. Do my part. All right, we got about 2 minutes. That's all I've got. Thank you very much. I did have one more. Excuse me. We got these verses here. I'll put it at the last. After all Paul had done, and all this work he had done, what did Paul say about it? I just did my part. Who did the real work? God did.